Today's excerpts are taken from an EMI recording featuring Owen Branigan as the Mikado, Richard Lewis as Nanky Poo, Geraint Evans as Coco, Ian Wallace as Pooh-Bah, Elsie Morrison as Yum-Yum, and Monica Sinclair as Catashaw. Sir Malcolm Sargent conducts the Pro Arte Orchestra and the Glyndebourne Festival Chorus. And a very special thanks to Nicholas Ivor Martin for his help in preparing this commentary and to EMI for providing the musical excerpts. Mikado may or may not be an opera. I'll get to that point in a bit, but it certainly opens like one. After an overture, raising the curtain on an introductory male chorus was a staple of 19th-century Italian opera. Think of Barber of Seville. Mikado's opening chorus contains a gaggle of Japanese gentlemen who helpfully introduce themselves. Said anything about these gentlemen being on Vazenjar on screen and fan? Well, they did. In 1639, the ruling shogun of Japan had decided that the growth of Western influence in Japan, specifically Spanish and Portuguese trade and the proselytizing of Christianity that came with it, was a bad thing. The shogun had closed Japan to the West and laid down death as the punishment for unauthorized foreign visits. Today, that seems more than a bit extreme, particularly given the feeling among historians that the move was most likely about the Japanese ruling class moving to protect themselves and their autocratic rule from foreign influences, or worse, foreign colonization. But the West was hardly a beacon of enlightenment at the time. In 1639, Europe had yet to emerge from the firestorm initiated when Martin Luther nailed his theses on religious reform to the door of Wittenberg Church. The more or less direct result of that action had been 130 years of war in Europe that would finally end in 1648 with the Treaty of Westphalia. And England was preparing a sequel in its own civil war. More remarkable than the seriousness of Japan's sanctions against tourism were their effectiveness. For two centuries, Japan remained closed to Western influence. Only in 1854 did Commodore Matthew Perry of the U.S. Navy reverse Japanese policy. And then only at gunpoint. He sent two white flags ashore and told the authorities to raise them when they wanted his naval bombardment to cease. The argument proved irresistible. While Japan had remained politically and culturally insulated, 200 years had wrought massive changes in the West. Following the Enlightenment, the French Revolution, the American Revolution, and the Industrial Revolution, the citizens of the United States and the United Kingdom consider themselves to be as modern as we consider ourselves to be today. We already had political freedom, the right to vote and to petition government for a redress of grievances. We had economic freedoms, the sanctity of contracts and of personal property. But we also had vacations, museums, a highly commercialized fashion industry, advertising, and souvenirs. You see where I'm going. One result of the opening of Japan was a decades-long craze in the West for things Japanese. Mikado and Madame Butterfly are two musical examples of the fascination with all things Eastern. The Art Nouveau movement in art, architecture, and design generally also owed much of its inspiration to Perry. In January 1885, a Mr. Tanaker Buikrosan decided to bring Japan to the English masses by opening a recreation of a Japanese village in fashionable Knightsbridge and charging admission. Gilbert attended. In fact, he hired some of the Japanese workers in the village to coach his Mikado performers. Among the things on display in the village were the Japanese vases, jars, screens, and fans that were all over Europe, items that in many cases formed Europeans' only image of a Japanese gentleman. Gilbert's Japanese gentlemen are curious about the appearance of a wandering minstrel player.
A wandering minstrel, I, a thing of shreds and patches, of ballads, songs, and snatches, and a dreamy lullaby, and a dreamy lullaby.
The minstrel player offers samples of his repertoire, including a martial song featuring a very un-Japanese martial instrument, the trumpet, and a naval song that harks back to Gilbert and Sullivan's earlier success, HMS Pinafore. The minstrel is interrogated by Pish-Tush and explains that he has returned to Titipu because he hopes to find his love Yum-Yum available. Rumor has it that Yum-Yum's fiancé and guardian, Coco, has been condemned to death for flirting. Notice the names. Except for the Mikado himself, every character in the opera has a silly name. Silly, but not accidental. There are two characters who represent the larger society, and both have names made from the sounds of contempt or disdain. There is Pish-Tush, a miscellaneous gentleman who sticks his head out of the chorus when a bit of exposition or interrogation is required. And there is the Lord High Everything Else, whom we have not yet met. His name is Pooh-Bah. A name so resonant that it is now in the dictionary where it is defined as a person having much influence, especially when perceived as pompously self-important. Ba, Pish, Poo, Tush, Tush. Translation, this minstrel is beneath our notice, as are the rest of you. I really can't be bothered. Go on about your business. Gilbert is making fun of the stuffiness of Victorian society. In contrast, the names of the younger characters all come straight from the nursery. There is Coco, which is what you get for breakfast if you're a good little boy. And maybe if you behave, we'll play Peep Bo later. Peep Bo is one of Yum Yum's sisters. I won't bother explaining Yum Yum. Nanky Poo is what we wipe our widow nose with. Finally, Yum Yum's other sister is a Pity Little Sing. No, that's her name, Pity Sing. Strangely enough, the name of the town, Titipu, is almost real. In the 19th century, the Japanese town of Chichibu used to be translated into English as Titibu, Bu instead of Poo. And then there was a Titibu silk that was a big import in England at the time Gilbert was writing. What is definitely not from real life is the law of the land that Pish-Tush describes to Nanky Poo.
Great Mikado, virtuous man, when he to rule our land began, resolved to try a plan whereby young men might best be steadied. So he decreed in words succinct that all who flirted, leered or winked, unless connubially linked, should forthwith be beheaded, 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 should forthwith be beheaded. I expect that you'll agree that he was right to so decree, and I am right, and you were right, and all is right as right can be.
And you were right, and we are right, and all is right as right can be,
and all is
This may all be as right can be, but fortunately it is not being put into practice. Those charged with implementing the royal decree have come up with a clever workaround. The next man scheduled for execution has been promoted to be Lord High Executioner. Since he can't cut off another head until he's first cut his own off, the law has in practice been suspended. As Nanki Poo contemplates this state of affairs, in comes Poobah, who frankly describes himself as a particularly haughty and exclusive person of pre-Adamite ancestral descent. Quite naturally, he goes on, "My family pride is something inconceivable. I can't help it. I was born sneering." Poobah is the Lord High everything else, having been elected or appointed First Lord of the Treasury, Lord Chief Justice, Commander-in-Chief, Lord High Admiral, Master of the Buckhounds, Groom of the Backstairs, Archbishop of Titipu, and Lord Mayor. These are not very Japanese-sounding titles, but the barb is aimed elsewhere. Victorian England was beginning to see some of its own traditions as hopelessly corrupt, particularly those relating to the election and appointment of government officials. So-called pocket boroughs, parliamentary seats where the member was effectively appointed by the biggest landowner, had in theory been stamped out by the Parliamentary Reform Act of 1832. But absentee appointments, where a government appointee collected the salary but didn't actually do the job, were still raising concerns. Even the army was in on the scheme. Until 1871, you could become a British army officer by buying a commission from someone who had actually earned it. Poobah explains to Nanki Poo that our logical Mikado, seeing no moral difference between the dignified judge who condemns a criminal to die and the industrious mechanic who carries out the sentence, has rolled two offices into one, and every judge is now his own executioner. Gilbert's audiences would have had no trouble placing this joke. British law had recognized the importance of jury trials since before the Norman Conquest. But the British Constitution, unlike the American, is nowhere written down, meaning its principles were susceptible to modification by Parliament. Two laws, one passed in 1846 and one in 1854, provided for expanded use of non-jury trials. In other words, there was a trend during Gilbert's life towards rolling judge and jury into a single person. Poobah also brings news of more immediate interest to Nanki Poo. Yum Yum is going to marry Coco today. The Lord High Executioner is received warmly by the assembled nobles, particularly as he explains that in case he ever does have to execute anyone, he's been assembling a little list of candidates. This is open season for Gilbert to make fun of every trend that annoyed him in contemporary society.
Someday it may happen that the victim must be found. I've got a little list of society offenders who might well be underground and who never would be missed. There's the pestilential nuisances who write for autographs, all people who have flabby hands and irritating laughs, all children who are up in dates and floor you with them flat, all persons who in shaking hands shake hands with you like that, and all the persons who on spoiling tater-tates insist, they'd none of them be missed.
He's got them on the list, and they'd none of them be missed, they'd none of them.
As you can see, there are lots of candidates. The song has two more verses, and this is one of the most popular places for singers and directors to update Gilbert by adding their own people to the list. Verse 2 makes fun of lady novelists, which today we can just smile at as dated. But the original also uses a word about persons of African descent that is universally removed, and with good reason. Behaviors and attitudes that were accepted in so-called polite society in 1885 we today find appalling. Think of the blatant racism attached to Mozart's magic flute bad guy, Monostatos. Already by the beginning of the 20th century, Brits themselves were beginning to worry if their Japanese allies would see Mikado as racist. When, in 1907, Field Marshal and Prince Fushimi Sadanaru of the Japanese royal family paid an official visit to London, the government banned Mikado performances. When Prince Fushimi learned that the Mikado had been banned during his visit, he expressed disappointment. He had been looking forward to it. We still perform the Mikado today because Gilbert's lyrics rise above some of the less palatable aspects of Victorian society. He never went over the line. Or anyway, hardly ever. While Coco consults with Pooh-Bah about the upcoming marriage, Yum-Yum herself and her sisters traipse by on their way home from school.
School are we, part as a schoolgirl well can be, filled to the brim with girlish glee. Three little maids from school, everything is a source of fun. Nobody's safe, for we care for none. Life is a joke that's just begun. Three little maids from school. Three little maids is the total sum. Three little maids from school. From three little maids take one away. Two little maids remain and they won't have to wait very long, they say. Three little maids from school. Three little maids from school. Three little maids who all I'm wearing come from a lady's seminary. Three from a genius tutelary. Three little maids from school. Three little maids.
Coco asks permission to embrace his bride-to-be, to which Yum-Yum very reluctantly agrees. Today, we associate the word Victorian with prude, a vast oversimplification and as inaccurate as such things tend to be. But the almost total asexuality of Gilbert's characters do reinforce the generalization. And remember the baby names. But the real prude in the Gilbert and Sullivan team was not Gilbert or Sullivan, but their producer, Richard Doyley Cart. Doyley Cart saw himself as the champion of a new British musical tradition, and part of his purpose was to kill off the racy French operettas that were so popular in London at the time. The pieces that he presented in his Savoy Theatre came to be known as Savoy operas. The Savoy operas were immensely popular, but they do not seem to have diminished Victorian audiences' interest in sex. More effective along these lines may have been the building of the theatre. Before Doyley Cart bought the land, it had been known for years to be the hangout of, quote, loiterers, vagabonds, and strumpets, unquote. Unfortunately, the site was also smelly, as a well-known fish sauce shop was nearby, only partially masked by Mr. Amay's perfume factory. Savoy operas were understood to be something less risque than continental operetta, but at the same time less stuffy than traditional opera. Was it opera? It certainly was not being done at Covent Garden, although Sullivan would have preferred it to be. After completing Princess Ida in 1884, the composer wanted to do something serious, or at least not satirical. "I would like to set a story of human interest and probability," Sullivan wrote, "where the humorous words come in a humorous, not a serious situation, and where, if the situation were a tender or dramatic one, the words would be of similar character." He settled for Mikado, which at least was less improbable than the work Gilbert had first suggested. That work involved a magic cough drop and had never crossed paths with probable in its life. Whether it was opera or not, the pairing of Gilbert and Sullivan had become part of the British Empire. Nanki Poo manages to get Yum-Yum aside and quiz her about the coming wedding. She is going to marry Coco, yes, but no, she does not love her guardian. Nanki Poo's response, "modified rapture," is one of Gilbert's greatest lines. Yum-Yum points out that even if Coco were out of the picture, it's hardly fitting socially for a ward of the exalted Lord High Executioner to marry a lowly street musician. Nanki Poo agrees with her principles, just not her facts. He outranks her. "I'm not a street musician," Nanki Poo explains. "I'm the son of the Mikado." Nanki Poo fled the capital because, under Japanese law, he was going to have to marry Katisha, an elderly lady of my father's court. While the lovers are crooning, Coco receives a letter from the Mikado insisting that executions must resume in Tiripu, and soon. Pooh-Bah suggests Coco start with himself, but Coco answers that, "I can't execute myself. In the first place, self-decapitation is an extremely difficult, not to say dangerous, thing to attempt. And in the second place, it's suicide, and suicide is a capital offense." Poobah is willing to argue the point, but when he suggests that Coco find a substitute, the clever tailor appoints Poobah himself Lord High Substitute. Now it's Poobah's turn to squirm, since patriotism and propriety prevent him from refusing outright. Instead, he argues he must decline to ensure that his own greed for honor and office are kept in check. The discussion ends with Poobah, Coco, and Pishtush singing about what the substitute can expect.
Sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark lock, in a pestilence to listen with a light knock knock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock from a cheap and chippy chopper on the big black block. To sit in solemn silence in a dull, dark lock, in a pestilence of prison with a light knock knock, awaiting the sensation of a short, sharp shock from a cheap and chippy chopper on the big black block. A dull, dark knock, a light knock knock, a short, sharp shock, a big black block. To sit in solemn silence in a pestilence of prison and awaiting the sensation of a cheap and chippy chopper on the big black.
Fortunately for the three bureaucrats, Nanki Poo has decided that life is not worth living without Yum Yum. He plans to hang himself until Coco convinces him instead to volunteer for public execution. Nanki Poo can marry Yum Yum and live at Coco's expense for a month, at the end of which time he'll be executed. Happily not so ever after. Yum Yum will be a widow, and Coco can marry her then. This is all worked out, and the residents are celebrating their salvation when up turns Katishaw, demanding Nanki Poo. Having solved their own problem, the townspeople suggest that Katishaw just go away.
Food is going to marry Yum Yum. Your anger pray very for all will be merry. I think you had better succumb.
Come.
And join our expressions of glee. On this subject, I pray you be dumb.
Come.
You'll find there are many who'll wait for a penny. The word for your guidance is mum. There's lots of good fish in the sea.
On this subject, we pray you be dumb. We think you have better succumb.
Katishaw has a trump card. She knows Nanki Poo is the son of the Mikado. But when she tries to play this card, Nanki Poo has the townspeople make so much noise they can't hear. Katishaw stomps off to enlist the Mikado's aid, and the act ends with the townspeople rejoicing.